I doubt he even knows the meaning of anger. Still, I'm not thrilled with the idea that he might be ghosting me. I like this casual, have sex once in a while thing we've got going on. It's the perfect stress release, a nice orgasmic break from my chaotic schedule, and an effective temporary amnesia inducer that makes me forget about my empty bank account. I guess he's been busy, I finally respond. Violet gives me a look. What? He's a hockey player, Jess. If he hasn't called you, that doesn't mean he's busy. It means he's busy. I raise my foam cup to my lips and take a sip. Meaning? Meaning he's screwing other people. The coffee gets stuck in my throat, and it takes a few seconds of coughing to clear it. He's not screwing other people, I sputter. And even if he was, I trail off. Even if he was, what? I'd be okay with it? I mean, I guess I'd have to be okay with it. Blake and I never talked about us being exclusive. We agreed that our sexcapades weren't going to be a habit. So how could I be mad if he's seeing other women? And why did it take so long for the thought to even occur to me? Blake has the attention span of a fruit fly. He probably forgets I exist the moment he zips up his pants and walks away. My chest clenches at the thought. Okay, that stings. And the idea of him having sex with someone else while also sleeping with me sends a hot streak of something up my spine. Oh no, I think it might be jealousy. Violet speaks up again when I don't continue. All I'm saying is, most of the Toronto roster is made up of man-whores, and Blake Riley has always been one of them. If you don't lock him down, he's going to move on to some other girl. I don't want to lock him down. Then I question my own statement because, do I? No, of course not. If I asked Blake for exclusivity, that would be saying that I want a commitment from him, which I don't. She shrugs. Then you can't get mad about him not texting you. I wasn't mad about it, I want to shout. I hadn't even noticed Blake's radio silence until she brought it up. I suddenly wonder if maybe she's trying to get into my head. I was already freaking out about this final, and now, thanks to Violet, my brain is even more of a jumbled mess. But nobody is that calculating, right? I'm sure she was just trying to make conversation. As we walk into the lecture hall, I banish all thoughts of Blake from my head and force myself to concentrate on what's important. Passing this exam, excelling in this program, proving to everyone that Jessica Canning is not a screw-up. I can do this. I know I can. I can't do this. For the millionth time since I sat down, my gaze flies toward the clock over the door. We had 3 hours to write the final. We're down to 10 minutes. I have one question left to answer. It's the hardest one on the test, which I decided to save for last after wasting the first 20 minutes, blankly staring at my exam booklet and struggling to write something. I'm supposed to pick one of the diseases on the list and write a 2-page systematic examination of the disease process, physiological changes and nursing implications, grounding the assessment in a pathophysiological framework. What the fuck does that even mean? Heat stings my eyes, and I order myself, no, command myself, not to cry in the middle of the lecture hall. I have 10 minutes to write a 2-page response. Nope, make that 9 minutes, because I just wasted a whole minute panicking about it. Violet, of course, is long gone. She was beaming like a fireworks display when she delivered her booklet to the instructor 30 minutes early. She's probably at the campus coffee house right now, bragging to everyone about how she aced this final. Stop thinking about Violet. Write something. I take a breath, then utilize the mantra Wes taught me after he caught me freaking out over a flower-related disaster when I was planning his wedding this summer. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I exhale slowly. Wow, All right. That kind of worked. Wes is really good at this calming yourself down stuff. With my pen firmly in hand, I bend my head and start writing. I write as fast as I can, not bothering to proofread every sentence the way I usually do. There's no time. Just write, Jess. You've got this. When the instructor clears her throat and announces that our time is up, I drop my pen and release a breath of relief. My wrist is sore as hell, and my fingers are numb and locked in a claw position, but I don't care, because I did it. I answered the motherfucking question. I filled 2 pages, and I feel like I've just finished a 10K marathon. On shaky legs, I walk down the steps to hand in my paper. The instructor sets it on the pile with the other booklets and smiles as she bids me goodbye. I smile back, but it's a tight, strained smile. The panic is setting in again because I notice that a lot of the other students are handing in not one, but 2 booklets. They wrote so much that they had to ask for extra paper? I wonder how many booklets Violet filled up. 10, I bet. God, why couldn't I have been born an overachiever? I'm glummer than glum as I hitch my messenger bag over my shoulder and exit the building. Outside, the air is frigid and the wind is brisk. Winter's coming, and I'm looking forward to it about as much as the Starks in the north. And that's just another mistake the underachieving Jess Canning could have avoided. Spend more time studying and less time binge-watching Game of Fucking Thrones. Maybe if I hadn't wasted so much time on pointless shit these past couple of years, I wouldn't be a 26-year-old first-year nursing student who probably just bombed her final exam. Wonderful. I'm feeling sorry for myself again. What happened to me? I used to be so confident. But it's like something has slowly been chipping away at my self-esteem ever since I graduated from high school. I watched all my siblings accomplish their goals. All my friends killed it in college and now have successful careers. The friends who didn't have a driving career passion still found passion in other ways, like Darcy, who married the best guy on the planet and just had her first kid. She emailed me a few weeks ago and admitted that being a wife and mom is the most rewarding thing she's ever done. And me? I'm struggling with yet another career path. And I don't think I've ever been in a relationship that I would classify as rewarding. Okay, enough. Pity party's over, Missy. I draw a breath. Yeah, I need to stop wallowing. It's totally counterproductive. I head back to the dorm, where I take the shower I was forced to skip earlier. Then I crawl into bed and pass out, catching up on all the sleep I missed during my 10-day cram session. When I wake up, the room is bathed in darkness. A weary glance at the alarm clock reveals that it's a little past 7. I'd slept for 7 straight hours. Awesome. Now I'll be up all night. Why didn't I set an alarm? A peek at my phone shows a missed text from Jamie. How'd the final go? Tell us over an early dinner. It was sent at 5, so I'm not sure if he and Wes have eaten already yet. But I'm starving. So I sit up and dial his number. Hey, I say after he picks up. Just got your message. I was napping.
I figured. He chuckles. God, I do not miss college. The thought of cracking open a textbook again makes me shiver in horror.
It's not fun, I agree.
So how do you think you did this morning? A+ or A++?
Neither. But I'd give up my firstborn for a C+. That's all I need to pass.
You can pump out a C+ in your sleep. You've always been one of the smart Cannings.
My eyebrows shoot up.
All right. I'm one of the smart Cannings?
That's very sweet of you to say. But we both know I'm at the bottom of our family smarts ladder.
Bullshit, he argues. Joe didn't even learn how to spell his name. All 3 letters of it. Until he was 5. Mom told me.
I gasp. Oh my God, really? I am so bringing that up at Christmas.
And Scotty almost flunked out of the police academy, Jamie reminds me.
Yeah, but that's because he was getting drunk with all the other cadets every night, instead of studying,
Not because he's a dum-dum.
True.
Jamie's voice softens.
But you're not a dum-dum either, Jesse. You know that, right?
Right, I say lightly, before changing the subject. Anyway, are you guys still up for dinner?
Actually, no. We ended up going to this Indian place after we didn't hear from you. Wes was grumbling about how hungry he was and didn't want to wait.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
I'd invite you over to raid our fridge, but it's probably better if Wes and I have some alone time tonight. He's all cranky because his practice was a complete disaster today.
I frown. Why? What happened?
Not sure. The team wasn't gelling, I guess? And Blake bombed in practice so bad that Hal changed up the lines. He didn't even want to come to dinner with us because he was in such a shit mood.
Surprise jolts through me. Blake Riley in a shit mood? That's unheard of. The man is a perpetual Susie Sunshine. And he turned down a chance to eat food? Very troubling indeed. Weird, I say absently. Okay. I'm going to let you go now. I need to forage for food. My brother laughs.
Come over tomorrow?
Sure. Now that my last exam is in the can, I have a whole week off before the new term begins. We hang up, but I don't get up from my bed. Instead, I pull up Blake's number and stare at the last messages we'd exchanged. They're from the home game where I sat with Mama Riley and listened to her lecture me about birth control. After a beat of hesitation, I take a page out of Jamie's book and text, "You alive?" I'm startled when my phone buzzes right away.
"No, I'm dead,"
I snicker to myself. "Want to hang out tonight? Just wrote my final exam." This time it takes several moments for him to respond.
"Not in the best mood, J-Babe. Maybe another time."
Undeterred, I type, "My mood's not great either. Let's be miserable together. I'll bring the ice cream if you provide the spoons." There's an interminably long pause before he answers.
"Yeah, sure."
Okay, so it's not the most enthusiastic reply. But hell, I'll take it. Pick your poison. Jess. When I arrive at a certain sleek condo tower by the waterfront, the doorman waves me in. But instead of getting off on Jamie's floor, I ride the elevator farther up, to Blake's. I've never been to his apartment before, and I'm not sure what to expect. There are only four doors on his hallway. I knock on the one that has a doormat depicting a St. Bernard with a hockey stick. Behind the door, I hear the muted sounds of TV, then the thump of footsteps. Blake opens the door wearing a cuddly-looking flannel shirt, unbuttoned to reveal his fabulous chest, and a pair of well-worn jeans that hug his sculpted thighs. In other words, he looks scrumptious. But then I check his face, and I see that something is wrong. His expression is pinched in a way that's completely unfamiliar on him.
"Hey, Jess," he says softly. "How are you?"
He shuffles backwards to let me in. How am I? Totally weirded out, that's how. I've had better days, I admit. But I brought ice cream and wine. I would have brought a chick flick, too, but you're not a chick. I step past him and take a closer look at the apartment. I'd expected it to look about the same as my brother's, but it's not the same at all. Blake's pad is huge, and his kitchen must have been designed by a Swedish architect named Torvald. Everything is sleek wood or gleaming white. A thick wool rug pads the floor under my feet. Gentle light washes over all the surfaces from hidden fixtures near the ceiling. And there are sliding glass doors on the far wall, leading to what must be a kick-ass terrace. "Wow," I say stupidly. "Fancy." He shrugs.
"What kind of ice cream?"
"I have dark mocha and also coconut. Pick your poison." I carry my goods toward his kitchen, but Blake takes the bag from me and unpacks it himself.
"Did you eat dinner?"
he asks, tucking the ice cream cartons into the freezer. "Not exactly," I hedge, "but that's okay." Blake clicks his tongue.
"How about we order some Chinese? You probably haven't eaten all that well if you've been studying."
His green eyes bore into mine. "Okay, thanks," I say quietly. I like chicken and broccoli. Actually, I like most anything. One warm hand cups the back of my head for a second. Just as I register how nice it feels, it's gone again. Blake orders our food while I locate a pair of wine glasses on a shelf over the countertop. But a corkscrew remains elusive. I can't figure out how to open his kitchen drawers because there aren't any handles. Out of frustration, I give one a little push and it slides open, a hushed click that reminds me of a high-tech device. Blake's kitchen drawers are like something you'd find on a space shuttle. I pour carefully because I don't know if red wine is capable of staining his immaculate marble countertops. Then I carry our glasses over to the generous leather sofa, where Blake is just finishing up his call. "To shitty days that end with wine," I announce, when he's ready to toast with me.
"I'll drink to that," he says, as we touch glasses.
We hold each other's gaze as we sip, and it feels weirdly intimate. Although maybe I should stop finding it weird, right? How many times have I gotten naked with this guy? Let's not count. "This isn't bad," I say of the wine. I went above my usual price point, splurging on a $20 bottle. "Let's drink every drop. Otherwise, I've squandered my last 20 bucks.
Blake cocks his head like a puppy. "Money troubles?"
"Always. I came to Toronto because nursing school cost only 35 grand a year, instead of 50. My parents kicked in 10, I took out loans for 10, and the last 15 are from a scholarship that I have to reapply for every year. If I don't get at least a C+ on today's exam, I probably won't be eligible next year. Ugh, the wine sours in my stomach. I shouldn't be worrying about this until my grades come back, but it's hard not to. If I don't get the scholarship, I won't be able to continue. And then where will I be? I'll owe back the money I borrowed from the bank, and my parents will be out 10 grand for another one of my failures. I'll be back in Cali living in my old bedroom, in debt, and looking for a job. Shoot me. Blake puts a hand on my knee.
I'll bet you aced your test.
I shake my head. Hard. I didn't, though. Whatever my superpower is, pathophysiology isn't it.
You're still awesome, Jesse. I refuse to believe that you won't make it in nursing school.
I give him a tired smile, because I appreciate how loyal that sounds. Now let's talk about your thing. What's the matter, champ? He takes a gulp of wine and then pats the place on the couch right next to him. I scoot over and he wraps an arm around me, and I lay my head on his chest because it's irresistible. He smells good, too. Like clean flannel and sandalwood.
I'm just off my game, is all,
he rumbles.
My superpowers are a little wobbly right now, too.
No, really? I'm sorry, sweetie. I pat his thick wrist with my free hand. Is there anything I can do to help? He's quiet for so long that I wonder if he even heard me. Then he says,
I just like seeing your pretty face.
I get an odd lump in my throat hearing it, but it's nothing that a little more wine won't wash down. A few minutes later, our food arrives. We eat sitting in comfortable dining chairs at Blake's small but sleek table in front of the windows. The lights of Toronto's waterfront twinkle on one side of the view, while the blackness of Lake Ontario coats the other. I ask Blake about the team's travel schedule, and then listen while he tells me which rinks and cities he enjoys visiting, and which ones are less fun. The mood is a little subdued, but I tell myself it's just because we both had shitty days. After we eat, I do our dishes and put away the leftovers in Blake's immaculate fridge. I pause in front of the freezer and ask which ice cream he wants first. I don't know if these really go together, I admit. Which one do you want to taste first?
You pick.
He stands beside me at the counter. I choose the mocha and pry the top off. My hands are a little sticky and I don't have a spoon. So I use my hip to open Blake's magical cutlery drawer, and this makes him grin. When he finally smiles, something relaxes inside me that I didn't even know I'd been clenching. I grab a spoon and dip it into the chocolatey surface. To keep his good humor, I fly the spoon toward his mouth until he opens for me. At the last second, my in-flight spoon banks sharply and flies toward my own mouth instead. But learn from me. Never try to deke a professional hockey player. His hand moves so fast, I don't see it until it grabs mine. With a playful shriek, I fight back. The spoon is almost mine. In fact, I manage to smear chocolate on my lip before Blake gets control and sweeps the bite of ice cream into his own mouth. His eyes gleam as he cleans the spoon.
"That's a nice look for you," he says,
lifting his chin to indicate the sticky smear on my lip. His eyes focus and then fill with heat. Slowly, and with great deliberation, I sweep my tongue across the spot. Did I get it? I'm teasing him mercilessly right now, but at least he doesn't look sad.
"No,"
he says, his voice pure gravel.
"It's... let me..."
He takes a step closer. Now he's looking down at me, his lips mere inches from mine. I quiver with expectation as he lifts a hand to cup my chin.
"Jess,"
he whispers. And then Blake swipes his thumb across my lip and takes a step backward, sighing. A beat goes by while my body says, "Really?" I feel unconscionably bereft. I'm used to Blake trying to get into my pants. Now he's not, and it's so confusing. I pick up the spoon and dig it into the ice cream. Blake watches me, his gaze on fire. I take a bite. Then I scoop up another spoonful and feed it to him. It's smooth and cold and wonderful. Heaven, really. Another bite for me, another one for him. He's still watching every move I make. His laser concentration makes me feel completely alive. With those big green eyes tracking me, I'm not a broke student or a pharmacology failure. I'm just here, in this moment. And it's beautiful. On the next bite, I let the spoon linger in my mouth. He looks pained. Then, instead of offering the next bite, I take that one too, smiling at him. Blake's eyelids get heavy. He mutters something like, "Oh, fuck it." And before I can blink, he tosses my spoon on the counter and grabs my head, tugging it toward him. With a groan, he claims my mouth, his tongue parting my lips immediately. Our kiss is cold and hot and pure chocolatey hunger. I moan into his mouth as a big hand grabs my bottom, pulling me into him. And there is nothing sexier than the great wall of Blake Riley. The front of me is flush against his hard body. The feel of him is addictive. It's really no mystery why I keep shedding my clothes like a snakeskin every time we're alone. His greedy kisses have already dismantled much of my executive function. My awareness narrows down to the taste of his kisses and the throbbing of my heart. And other places. My hands are almost too small to grasp his shoulders, but I need more of him. "Bedroom," I murmur between kisses. He doesn't reply. Instead, he picks me up in one hand. We don't even stop kissing as I fly through the air perched on his forearm. The light dims as we enter a back room. A second later, he tosses me onto a giant cloud, which turns out to be a bed the size of my entire dorm room. He whips his shirt off. When he unzips his jeans, just the sound of the zipper makes me shiver. And then he shoves those down, along with his boxers. As always, my mouth goes dry at the dual sights of his massive erection and the look of determination on his handsome face. This beautiful man wants me. Me! It's enough to make a girl dizzy.
"You realize what this means, right?"
he says, putting one muscular knee onto the bed. "Hmm?" Then I have zero self-control. He leans down to grasp the ankles of my yoga pants, and whoosh, they disappear, along with my scruples. My shirt meets the same fate a second later. Blake props himself onto his elbows over my body. He puts his face between my breasts and sighs. Nudging my bra out of the way with his chin, he takes my nipple into his mouth suddenly and sucks on it with soft lips. I gasp, my back arching unbidden.
You know what this means, he says again, unclasping my bra. It means we're going out for real.
Driving under the influence of orgasms. Jess. It takes a second for me to process the words because Blake's hungry lips have attacked my other breast.
Wait, what?
I demand. He releases me with a wet pop.
You, me, we're a thing. If I do you in my bed.
Says who? My words are tough, but I've heated up faster than the top of the line stove I spotted in his spiffy kitchen.
Says me. My bed is a temple. It's reserved for solo spanks and girlfriends.
Blake licks a hot stripe between my breasts, and I shiver uncontrollably. Damn him. He can't drop a girlfriend bomb while licking me all over. It's impossible to concentrate.
Just close your eyes, Jesse. We'll talk deeds later.
What deeds could we possibly need to go over? I'm not his girlfriend and I'm not... Oh, wow. His tongue is working my nipple now and it's pure heaven. Soft flicks and gentle kisses that make my toes curl into the mattress. And his warm palm is traveling down my stomach, tickling my mound, cupping my aching core. I moan when the heel of his hand applies delicious pressure to my clit. Okay. He's right. We can save the talking for later. It's impossible to multitask when he's touching me, when he's sliding down my body and planting greedy kisses on my inner thighs.
Better than ice cream.
He rasps against my sensitive flesh, his tongue coming out to tickle my clit.
So much sweeter, baby.
Then he captures the little bud between his lips and sucks hard enough to make me cry out. Oh my God, I choke. My fingers tangle in his hair, keeping him trapped between my thighs. Keep doing that. His laughter vibrates through my body. He continues to suckle me while one finger teases my folds, circling my opening until finally, slowly, slipping inside. I gasp in delight and rock against him. He's rocking too, I realize. He's all but fucking the mattress as he licks and sucks and groans. My eyelids flutter open, and I see the taut concentration in his features as he pleasures me. The flush on his cheeks, the restless shift of the hips he's grinding into the mattress. I bunch his hair between my fingers and tug his head up. Get on your back.
Not done with you, he mumbles.
Trust me. His eyes gleam as he shifts onto his side. Then he grins and rolls over, propping his hands behind his head and awaiting my next move. The ache between my legs is unbearable, making it difficult to move. I order my shaky limbs to cooperate and climb onto his muscular body, twisting around so that my butt is wiggling in his face and his massive erection is at eye level with me.
Fuck, he gasps. Yeah, babe, that's what I like to see.
Two big hands cup my ass and pull me down onto his face. When his tongue glides over me, I almost come on the spot. Taking a breath, I grasp his cock in one hand and lower my mouth to his engorged head. I give a tiny lick, then breathe out, better. His response is a hungry growl, punctuated by the brush of his tongue on my clit. I wrap my legs around him and suck, gently, the salty flavor of him tickling my tongue and heating my blood. He tastes delicious. He's thick and hard and throbbing in my mouth, and it's the hottest thing in the whole damn world. I don't know how long we lie in this position, torturing each other with greedy licks and deep sucks, but just as the first tingles of orgasm warm the base of my spine, Blake abruptly yanks me off of him and flips me over.
Jesus, he spits out. If I don't fuck you right now, I'm gonna die, Jesse.
I laugh hard enough to shake the mattress, but the poor man doesn't even notice. He's too busy grabbing a condom from the nightstand drawer. Too busy stroking his cock as he sheathes himself. Too busy guiding that huge dick to my entrance and falling forward onto one elbow. The penetration is swift. 1 second, I'm achingly empty. The next, I'm deliciously full. Blake moans against my neck and drives his hips forward. Then he retreats, a slow, torturous withdrawal, until only his tip is inside me. An unbearable tease. My inner muscles clamp tight, trying to draw him in again, but he stays in that position for a moment, his gaze locking with mine.
"This is nice," he says solemnly.
I swallow. "Would be nicer if you moved."
"In a minute."
He brings his hand to my face and strokes it gently.
"I'm enjoying this. Your cheeks are bright red. So are your tits."
He ducks his head and kisses one breast.
"You're so hot when you're turned on."
I grasp his ass and dig my fingers into the taut flesh, trying to push him deeper inside. But his body is unyielding. The Great Wall of Blake ain't moving until he says so.
"Will you say my name when you come?"
Warm, wet lips skate up my throat before hovering inches from my mouth.
"Shout it if you can. It'll make me crazy."
Another laugh pops out. "Dude, I can't control what I say during orgasm. It's mostly gibberish." He kisses me, his tongue toying with mine until we're both breathless.
"You'll say my name," he murmurs.
And I don't know if that's another question or him just stating a fact. But either way, I don't have the mental capacity to decode it because he's moving again. God, he's moving. Slow, deep strokes. So fucking slow. Unbearably slow. "Damn it, Blake, fuck me," I beg.
"Mmm,"
is all he says, and the lazy tempo continues. My body screams for relief. Every square inch of skin is tight and prickly, and the pressure between my legs is one hard thrust away from detonating. But Blake is determined to torture me. His hips move at a snail's pace, his expression not unlike the way he looks on the ice, sharp focus and a predatory gleam.
"You close."
His voice holds a taunting note, his lips curved in a slight smirk. "You know I am," I say desperately. I buck my hips, but that just makes him stop moving. Frustration streaks through me. "Please."
"Please what?"
He teases my nipple with rough fingertips. "Please let me come."
"Please let me come what?"
Confusion rises for a moment, until I realize what he wants. "Please, Blake. Please let me come, Blake." A huge grin stretches across his face.
"Okie dokie."
And then he thrusts into me so fast and deep that my lungs seize up. The punishing stroke rips the orgasm out of me. I gasp for air as a burst of ecstasy rocks into me like a shockwave. I hear things. I think it's my voice. I think, yup. I'm moaning Blake's name over and over again. And I think he might be chuckling as he fucks me into oblivion. But any amusement he might have felt disappears the moment he starts trembling on top of me. I'm no longer embarrassed about chanting his name like a meditation mantra, because when he comes, it's with a hoarse, passion-drenched
"Jess!"
that echoes in the bedroom and vibrates in my heart.
Blake. Holy shitballs. That wasn't sex. That was something else entirely. My chest is heaving as if I've just finished a 4-minute shift on the ice during a power play. I collapse on top of Jess, the aftershocks of release still surging through my blood, tingling in my balls. Then I realize I'm crushing her, and I roll us both over so her soft, curvy body is sprawled over me like an electric blanket. "I can't remember my name," I mumble. Her dry voice tickles my neck. "Really? Because I think I just shouted it, oh, about 100 times. "Hells yeah, she did. Why do you think I came so hard? Hearing my name on those sexy lips was like the aphrodisiac of all aphrodisiacs. Fuck oysters. From now on, whenever I need to feel horny, I'm just calling Jess Canning and asking her what my name is. We lie there for several minutes, catching our breath. Finally, regretfully, Jess disengages her lady bits from my man bits. She takes pity on me and removes the condom, then ducks into the bathroom. When she returns, she hesitates at the foot of the bed. I pat the mattress. Get back here, baby, we're cuddling. She bites her lip. I mean it, J-Babe. If I don't get my cuddling time in, I'll be a mess at practice tomorrow. I guess I could use a cuddle, she admits. She climbs back onto the bed and curls up beside me. I instantly sling one arm around her and tug her closer. I wonder if she's thinking about her money issues again. That bums me out. Someone as smart and awesome as Jess shouldn't have to worry about anything. She deserves to have everything handed to her on a silver platter, because she's a queen. I guess that makes me her king. Yeah, I like the sound of that. King Blake. Can you buy a country? I muse. She sighs against my pecs. Do I even want to ask you to explain that? Like a small country, can you buy one? And then turn it into a monarchy so you can be king and queen? I absently run my hand up and down her spine. She's so damn tiny in my arms. I think you and I should be royalty. Of course you do. There's a note of affection in her voice. Silence washes over us. It's nice. A relaxing, peaceful interlude as my lady and I lounge in bed after the best sex ever known to man. Jesse?
Hmm?
I'm glad we're dating now. Cue her arguments in 3, 2, 1.
We're not dating.
I grin at the ceiling. Sure we are. We did it on my bed. I shrug. That means we're dating.
That's not how it works.
She protests, raking a hand through her golden hair.
You don't date people. Everyone says so. I mean, you're just going there now because we had spectacular sex and you want more of it. It's just the dopamine talking. I read up on this for my pharmacology exam.
I snort. You're saying I'm driving under the influence of orgasms?
Exactly. You're heading out on a road trip tomorrow.
Moving quickly, I roll up on an elbow and look down at her. You know my game schedule? Why would you look if we weren't dating? She gives me a shove so I'll lie down again, which I do. She puts her head on my shoulder, and it feels so nice.
I know your schedule because it's Wes's schedule, and Jamie and I have a date to make lasagna and watch the game on TV.
Oh, duh. It's nice that you can hang out with your brother. You two get along pretty well.
We do, except when we don't, and I miss my family a lot. I didn't go home for this vacation week because the airfare is expensive, but I'm used to seeing them every Sunday for a big meal. It's nice.
My girl misses her family. Now that we're dating, come with me to dinner at my folks' house on the weekend. She laughs.
Blake, seriously? You're heading out on a week-long road trip where I'll bet you'd rather be single.
Nope. I'm gonna text you every night. You'll see.
We're not dating, she says.
Except she's cuddling me with her entire naked body and stroking my chest lovingly with one hand. Want to eat ice cream in bed? I ask.
Yeah?
She sighs, the arch of her foot stroking mine. Silly Jesse. We are dating. She just doesn't know it yet.
I'll be in my bunk. Jess. After all the stress I've been under, it's weird to have a week off. I'm so fried that I spend the first day watching videos on my laptop of cats riding Roombas. After a few hours in this vegetative state, I realize my dorm room is awfully lonely. I even miss Violet, who has gone back to wherever perfect nursing students come from. That night, I bask in the luxury of eating a falafel alone in my room. Violet isn't here to yell at me, so that's something. At 10 o'clock, I receive a text from Blake.
Hi, girlfriend. I just wanted you to know I'm turning in for the evening. Alone. Because we're dating.
I'm not a total jerk, so I reply, Hey there, how's Chicago? I'm turning in too. Alone. Because that's how I roll.
I miss you, he writes.
And now I don't know whether or not to be honest. I miss you too, I admit. but that doesn't mean we're dating. We are, though. Good night, Blake.
Good night, girlfriend.
The next day, I take a yoga class first thing in the morning, and then undo all of my good work by spending the afternoon worrying about my exam grades. I should have gone home to California, and I would have if my credit card didn't hate me. I'm not the type of girl who likes to be alone. I need people around me. The nice word for this is social, but another view on it is needy. In fact, the reason I hugged up with Blake in the first place was out of loneliness. So I hang out the next evening with Jamie, who also seems at odds.
I got used to having Wes around, he admits. Now that the season has started up again, I guess I have to remember how to be alone. Here's a tip for you. Fall for someone who doesn't travel 70 nights a year.
My face heats. I guess Hozier is out then, I joke.
Some guys are worth it, my brother says. Yum, that voice. He's a little skinny, though. I like a meatier.
So do I, apparently. I don't know if I can get used to you perving on men.
Hey, I'm married. I can't steal your boyfriend.
I don't have a boyfriend, I say quickly. Jamie gives me a quizzical look.
Joking.
Right. Together we make a giant lasagna and then eat it in front of the big screen TV.
This is going to be a tough game, he says when it's hockey time. Chicago is a great team, and their best player is all healed up from his injury last year.
He rubs his hands together as they set up for the first face-off. Wes is starting, but Blake is on the second line tonight. I find myself looking for his face whenever the camera pans the bench. He's easy to spot. Those broad shoulders are unmistakable. And each time his long legs kick over the wall to take the ice, I sit up a little straighter. The speed of the game is breathtaking. But I wish I was in the stadium so I could see him better. The cameraman keeps teasing me with glimpses, and then taking Blake away again. He grabs the puck on a breakaway, and the camera zooms in.
Come on, dude, Jamie yells.
I hear myself squeal as he charges the net. Chicago's D-men get their acts together and try to block his path, but all that muscle on a fast course toward the goal cannot be stopped. The goalie butterflies himself in an attempt to block the shot, but Blake puts the puck right over the guy's shoulder and into the corner of the net. Oh, God, I shriek. Blakey! It's almost as if he can hear me. He does his signature selly, riding his stick like a pony. Except then he looks up at the camera and blows a kiss. Jamie and I are jumping up and down on the couch.
A goal in the first 5 minutes. We've got all the momentum, my brother crows. Seems like Blake is back.
My phone is burning a hole in my pocket. I want to text him to tell him how exciting that was. But he can't read it for hours anyway. I can hardly sit still for the rest of the game. Jamie and I drink a six-pack while waiting to find out if Chicago can answer our early lead. They can't. Blake gets an assist, and then Wes gets a goal. I make sure to shriek twice as loud for Wes. By the time the final buzzer rings, it's 3-1. Toronto has won. I'm drenched with sweat. And tipsy, too. And there's something I need to admit to myself. I'm now a hopeless hockey fan. But who wouldn't be? It's a really exciting game. My sudden interest has absolutely nothing to do with the extra-large-sized forward wearing jersey number 17. When I emerge from the subway near my dorm a half hour later, my phone chirps with a text.
I blew my girlfriend a kiss. I hope she was watching.
Oh, she was. Great game, I write, stepping right around the issue of the kiss. Jay and I had a lot of fun watching you guys mow down Chicago. My phone is silent after that, and I assume the conversation is closed. But 20 minutes later, I'm shutting off my light when the phone chirps again. When I check the screen, the only message is a 3-second video of Blake's hands unzipping his suit trousers. He's looped it. So those big hands unzip the pants and then unzip them again. Yikes. I've watched it 7 times before I even blink. What to do? My natural impulse is to tease him back. I like Blake, and he's so sexy I'm practically licking my phone right now. But who is he to insist we're a couple? Who does that? It's maddening. He drives me insane. I wish he was here right now. With a loud groan, I roll over, face down on the bed. My ass is in the air, clad in nothing but little cotton panties that happen to say, "It's not going to spank itself." They were a joke from Dyson last Christmas, and since I haven't done laundry since exams started, they made their way out of the back of the drawer today. I angle my camera around to my backside and stab at the phone's screen until I hear the camera shutter sound. The resulting picture is a little off-center, so I crop it a little. And while I'm in the photo editor, I try a couple of filters until I find the one that best accentuates my bootay. It's not that I'm trying to impress Blake. It's just that I'm artsy. I hit send, and the reply is almost immediate. OMFG, if you need me, I'll be in my bunk with my hand on my junk. This lights me up inside, and then almost as quickly fills me with guilt. Damn it. Do I want to date Blake? Sure I do. But it's a terrible idea because... Picking up my phone one more time, I dial Dyson. It's only 8 o'clock in California, so he answers right away.
Yo, Jess, how are you doing in the frozen north? Or should I say, who are you doing?
Cut to the chase, much?
What is the count up to now?
The count?
We were at 3 last time we spoke. The chair, the wedding, and the Hummer.
I sigh. None of your business.
Oh, I think it is. Besides, I'm on a 15-minute break before I start the other 4 hours of my shift. Give me a happy thought. Are we up to 4? Dare I hope for 5?
Well, I clear my throat. It depends how you count.
Ugh.
Indeed. And he doesn't even know about the bed. We got a little sticky eating ice cream that night and ended up doing it again in the shower.
Was it awesome?
Completely, but there's a problem.
He doesn't want to do it again?
Dyson yelps.
Then he's an idiot.
That's not it. Now he says we're dating. That's not cool, right? You can't just inform someone that they're half of a couple.
There's a silence on the line.
I'll be half a couple with Blake Riley if you won't. That man is smoking.
He's as hot as they come, I agree. But he's assuming too much. Who does that?
He must be really into you.
I open my mouth to argue and then shut it again. Is he really? For all his loud-mouthed bluster and total lack of a filter, Blake is actually pretty hard to read. Everything is light and airy and surface only with him. Other than his confession about his ex and the fake baby mama drama, I'm not sure I've ever had a deep conversation with the guy. Maybe deep is overrated. Maybe? Truth is, I've only ever dated intense creative types. Guys like Raven, who could sit for hours talking about his feelings and pondering whatever existential crises he was going through at that moment. But another truth? Sometimes that got really old and boring. I can't remember laughing with Raven the way I laugh with Blake. I always thought I'd end up with an artsy kook like myself. And sure, Blake's as kooky as they come, but in a different way. He's bold and loud and totally obnoxious at times. But he's also hilarious, sweet, kind, loyal, great in bed. A groan slips out. I don't know, Dice, I don't trust it. He's a famous hockey player. I'm a nursing student who underperformed on her final exam.
Oh, sweetie, I'm sorry. Did you get your grade back already?
No, I'm just bracing myself. The worst will be if I have to tell my parents this spring that my scholarship money isn't going to be renewed. I'm going to tell them over the phone so I can't see Mom's face. Dyson clicks his tongue.
Panic much? You probably squeaked by. You studied hard.
Maybe.
We have to work on your self-confidence.
I'm confident, Dyson laughs.
Not so much, kitty cat. You dump your boyfriend so fast, so they can never dump you first. And now you're absolutely wigging out about your whole future. When you don't even know yet what grade you got on the test, that, my sweet love, is not confidence talking.
Now I'm practically sputtering into the phone. That is not an accurate diagnosis. I don't know who I'm more upset with right now, Dyson or Blake. I'm confident. Ask anyone.
Uh-huh. This from the girl who didn't like to cross the middle school cafeteria alone. You used to make me walk to the girls' room with you and wait outside.
Dyson, if it's fair to criticize the things we did in the seventh grade, I'm going to have to call you out on that awful polyester blazer with the satin lapels. There's a puff of outrage in my ear.
I was wearing it ironically.
Great. Now I've made him mad too. Everyone is mad at everyone else. Look, I'm really tired. Sorry to whine in your ear. He sighs.
Get some sleep, Jesse. But my vote will be the same in the morning. I think he likes you. And I'm pretty sure we've been having the same chat since middle school.
Well, ouch. Good night, Dyson.
Night, kitty cat.
Two nights later, I don't really feel like going out, but I promised my brother I'd accompany him to an event thrown by the wives and girlfriends of the hockey team. Jamie is an honorary member of the WAGS Club. As far as I can tell, they have two purposes. First, to drink together at every home game. Second, they do charity work. Tonight is some kind of planning session for their annual holiday Christmas party. It raises money for the same children's hospital where I visited the cancer ward. For my very first hospital assignment. What are we bringing? I ask my brother, eyeing the shopping bag under his arm.
I brought a couple of six-packs. The WAGS like fruity drinks, so BYOB if you want something else.
I love fruity drinks. We've arrived at a downtown apartment building with a lobby even grander than the one where my brother lives. Whose apartment is this again?
Katie and Ben Hewitt live here. Wait till you see this place.
Jamie isn't kidding. Their pad is swanky. It has a formal entry foyer with a chandelier. A uniformed maid takes our coats. When we step into the giant room beyond, my eyes lift to find the double-height ceiling. There's a walkway around the upper part, from which doors disappear to parts unknown. Jesus, I whisper. Jamie cocks an eyebrow. I clear my throat. This is some place. The women spot us and then tackle Jamie like a tidal wave. You came. You didn't have to bring beer. Have a cookie. Good Lord. I love Jamie, but he's not a celebrity. They cluck on over to me. I'm hugged and patted too. You look so much like him. Would you believe there are six of us? I ask, shaking Katie Hewitt's hand. Shut the front door, she shrieks. Six? Are you all gorgeous? I don't know if the world can handle that much beauty. Her words turn me into a stuttering goofball, because I've never been good at taking a compliment. Luckily, someone brings me a strawberry daiquiri. Jamie's wink says, I told you so about the fruity drinks. But the thing is delicious. And I've decided that these women know how to have fun. Starving nursing students don't party like this. And it's a nice treat. I'm introduced around as Jamie's gorgeous sister, which means nothing because everyone here is either glamorous or beautiful or both. Katie Hewitt has thick glossy hair and diamond earrings so large that I'm surprised she can hold her head up. She's a hoot, too. Her brand of glam isn't rich and stuffy. It's, let's party like wild women. She's wearing a custom Toronto jersey with the logo done in rhinestones. And I'd lay odds that her red lipstick was color-matched to the team's logo. Under one arm, she holds a chubby white poodle with a red bow on its curly little head. She's the hostess, so I take her for the leader of this organization. But when the meeting is called to order, it's by a dark-haired beauty named Estrella. She's wearing a C on her Toronto sweater, and I can't decide whether her husband is the team captain or if it refers to her own title, because she's clearly in charge. Listen up, ladies, she declares, banging on a daiquiri glass with an elegant silver spoon. First, I want to thank Katie for hosting us tonight. Oh, come on, I fucking live for this, Katie says, beaming. A cheer rises up. Estrella taps her spoon again, calling for order. Now, we have a very important decision to make. Which caterer do we want for the Christmas party? All the carefully made-up faces around the room turn thoughtful.
A young woman raises her hand. Which one made those pigs in blankets we had at our summer party? That's the guys at North End, but there'll be children at this party, and hot dogs are a choking risk. There are murmurs of agreement, and several heads are scratched. But we can still have mini empanadas and mini quiche, so all is not lost. They discuss miniaturized foodstuffs for a few minutes, while I wander over to the buffet table and nibble on fancy cheese. My brother sets himself up in front of the largest TV screen I've ever seen, on a beanbag chair the size of Mount McKinley. He pats the space beside him, and I sit down to the familiar crunch of shifting styrofoam. God, I want this chair, I whisper, petting the plush surface. It's woolly and warm. I could just live my whole life right here. It's like a giant
sheep, Jamie supplies. Then he grins. Did Blake ever tell you about his fear of sheep?
His what? I'm thrown a little by Jamie's mention of Blake. I don't want my family to know about my recent frisky business with the guy. They already think I'm a screw-up and a lightweight. I don't need to give them any more reasons to judge me.
Yup. He hates sheep. Can't stand them. Thinks they're dangerous.
I snort, and my head fills with pranks I could play on Blake. Do they make sheep underwear? But that only makes me think of Blake removing my clothes.
Rawr.
The wags have finished their caterer discussion and are ready to vote. Jamie, Estrella calls, do you want to weigh in? We're having trouble deciding between the place with the sesame chicken on a stick and the place with the hotter waiters.
Tough call,
my brother says, tearing his gaze away from the pre-game commentary.
But I'd go with the sesame chicken. The hot waiters might have quit. And there will be plenty of hotness in that room already.
More murmurs of agreement. The sesame chicken wins the vote, and then attention shifts toward the giant screen on the wall. Puck drops in five, Katie says. Who needs a fresh drink? I do. Save my seat, I order my brother. My daiquiri is topped up, just as Wes and Blake take the ice together on the first line. It's a blast watching the game in this room full of hardcore cheerleaders. When Lukaszek gets the puck on a breakaway, Estrella starts screaming. He shoots, but the goalie scoops it into his glove. I love you anyway, Estrella shouts, and everyone laughs. I enjoy myself immensely. Since Katie's TV is the size of a double-decker bus, Blake seems nearly life-size every time he skates past me. My cheering for him is silent, but that doesn't mean it isn't heartfelt. Every time he charges down the ice, I get a thrill. The rum in my drink has made me a little breathless and woozy. I find myself hoping Blake texts me again tonight, or calls. His voice in my ear would sound pretty good right about now. When the first period ends, the camera follows the Toronto players as they exit the bench, down the chute. The lens zooms in on a pair of young women banging on the plexi, screaming like Beatles fans on the Ed Sullivan show. They're pressing signs to the glass, and I can read them all too well. Future hockey wives, and marry me, Blake Riley. Under that, a phone number. That cools me off a tad. For the first time since I heard Blake's awful story, I feel a pang of empathy for his ex. People are crazy. That marriage proposal on the poster is probably only 75% kidding. My brother opens a new beer for himself.
You're good to stay, right? He asks me. This is more hockey than you usually sit through in a week.
Oh, I'm having fun. The second period is tense and fast. There's a fight between Lemming and one of the Dallas forwards. The pitch of the wags' shrieks is deafening, until Lemming ends up on top. Aren't you glad Wes is not a fighter? I whisper to my brother.
Guess so. His face will stay pretty this way.
Drops of blood stain the ice when the refs separate the two players. Shit, hockey is dangerous. I wonder how the wags sleep at night. After the next face-off, Blake and Wes make a new attack. They cross the puck between them so many times I lose count. Both players get shots on goal, but it's Wes's that goes in. My brother leaps to his feet with a shout of victory. Katie runs over to hug him. Jamie has to do a shot. It's a rule.
Why? I ask. He grins at me. Spouse of the scoring player drinks. That's why I'm hung over the morning after a game with the wags.
Katie swiftly appears with a bottle of tequila and a shot glass. On the screen, they call the point for Wes and the assist for Blake. Blake does his usual celly. Then he looks into the camera and winks, blowing a kiss. He clearly mouths the words, "Hi, baby." "Whoa," Estrella hoots. "Did you see that?" "What the fuck?" someone else adds. "What did I miss?" Katie shrieks, handing a shot and a lime wedge to Jamie. "Blake Riley throwing kisses. Does anyone know for who?"
"Really?"
Katie looks at the tequila bottle in her hand. "I haven't poured a shot for a Blake Riley goal in years. Anyone have the dirt?" A strawberry blonde pipes up from the corner of a leather sectional sofa the size of Lake Ontario. "I heard Blake didn't go to the strip club last night, and when they asked him why, he said his girlfriend wouldn't appreciate it." Startled gasps reverberate through the room, and I feel heat creep up my neck. Suddenly, my fingernails become very interesting. It's been a while since I had a manicure. I can feel one gaze boring into me, and it's coming from beside me on the beanbag chair.
"You wouldn't know anything about that, would you?"
Jamie asks, his voice low. "Me?" I squeak, picking at a cuticle. "That tequila has gone to your head, baby bro." The game resumes, thank God. My brother's focus shifts elsewhere. And since Wes has a great night on the ice, Jamie is sloppy drunk by the time we get into separate cabs to go home. I lie in my bed and wonder if Blake's interest in dating me has survived another night. It's 11:30 when my phone chirps.
"How's my girl?"
The words warm me all the way through. "Drunk and sleepy," I tell him. "Nice assist, hot stuff." The phone rings and I answer it immediately.
"You watched again?"
he says, his voice making